Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, The Game here on this Tuesday. I always enjoy our next guest. Tim Hasselbeck joins us now. Timmy, what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. Hope you had a happy new year. Always appreciate you.
Yeah, I did. Had a great new year. Also got to enjoy that game last night at Vandy. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Good way to start the year.
Yeah, it was fun. Big Joe was there and greatly enjoyed it. So let's talk a little Titans as the coaching search is underway. Mike Borgonzi spoke to the media today. Didn't really show too much of his hand as you didn't expect him to, but everybody's going to connect the dots to Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator with the Chiefs. Kevin Stefanski's name is out there. They've asked to talk to Raheem Morris as well as others. But I want to go on something that our afternoon show brought up yesterday. Let's say it's Matt Nagy. That's who they end up hiring. There's a report in The Athletic that he has said he wouldn't call plays. If Mike Kafka doesn't get the job in New York, would he be somebody you could see working with Nagy and Cam Ward?
Yeah, so I don't think that Mike Kafka is going to get the Giants job. And so I do think that he ends up being available. I do think other people will want to hire him. And then, of course, like his background in Kansas City, I mean, he played for Andy, then coached with Andy. He's got a good reputation. You know, presumably, you know, you don't know the reputation between or the relationship between, you know, Nagy and Mike Kafka. But, like, yeah, I would expect that. If Matt Nagy was not going to be the play caller, that, you know, it would be somebody that's definitely closely aligned in terms of just general philosophy and they work well together. Because even if he's not the play caller, you know, as the head coach, I'm sure he's going to want to be doing things that he would be doing if he were the play caller.
You know, I think a lot of fans, and including ourselves, have kind of gone, well, I'd really like them to hire somebody with head coaching experience. But with that said, would it behoove the Titans to have a staff that includes more than one former head coach, and how much of a benefit could that be?
Yeah, I think it can be beneficial. Just as, you know, I do think that there's, you know, knowledge and wisdom to guys that have been through that before. You know, I don't think that it's – listen, Matt Nagy's been a head coach before. So, I think the idea that, you know, he would need another head coach on his staff or something like that, I don't think that that would be, you know, something I feel like is necessary. I think the bigger thing is that, you know, are guys aligned and feel like they're working well together, whether they have head coaching experience or not. I think that ends up, you know, being the key. Like, look, in Cleveland, you know, Kevin Stefanski was a head coach. Jim Schwartz is on the staff. He's had head coaching experience, but he's not a head coach. Like, I'm sure that that's helpful. Did it, you know, amount to the success that they were looking for in Cleveland? No, it didn't. So I don't know that that's necessarily something I feel like I would be looking for. If it happens and it's beneficial, great. But other than that, you know, I don't think it's be a requisite of any kind.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Who is the best candidate available in your opinion?
I do think Matt Nagy is a great candidate. I think Steve Spagnuolo is a great candidate. You know, I think some of it is, you know, like what you're looking for, you know, if the idea is, look, I want somebody that's been around Andy Reid and is going to do it the way Andy has done it, then I think looking at that tree makes a lot of sense. You know, I think you start to, you know, you go into some of these other guys, like other guys that, you know, their names are out there. So whether it's, you know, Brian Flores, you know, potentially in Las Vegas, okay, is that something that you would want to, you know, investigate? Is, you know, Josh McDaniels, does that change things, you know, in terms of, you know, what he's done, you know, as a head coach? Like, does he deserve another opportunity? You know, I saw Cliff Kingsbury's name out there. You know, I don't know that that's a route that I would go, but I understand it. So I think a lot of it is like, okay, what do you feel like as, you know, the ownership and as the general manager, you feel like okay, this is kind of the non-negotiable of what I want, whether that's offensive-minded head coach, defensive-minded head coach, whether it's head coaching experience or not, whether it's, look, this is what I know. What Andy Reid has done is a tried-and-true process. I've been a part of it, seen it work. I'm going to go that route. Well, like, then I think you hone in and you go that route.
Well done. Tim Hasselbeck on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Tim, what if you get a job, hypothetical, in NFL, and you're going to be the new head coach, and the GM says, oh, by the way, you've got to take Mr. X as your offensive coordinator, and you don't know Mr. X that well. What do you do then?
I think you find that out before you take the job, and I don't think you take the job if you're not comfortable having coaches forced on you. And, look, that's a real common occurrence in college football where, you know, coaches, you know, get forced on you. And I think it's hard because there's just too much time, too many decisions that need to be made to have an environment where, you're not aligned. You don't work well with the guy. So I don't think that that's a good process. Now, I think it's totally fine to say, hey, we have a guy here. He's got another year left on his contract. You may not know him, or maybe you've never worked with him, but we would like you to at least meet with him and see if you would like to have him on the staff.
Well done.
So, you know, then you do that and you go, oh, like, I'm making this up. Let's say Mike McCoy's got another year. I haven't looked into it if that's the case, but like, say he does, you know, and they say like, all right, look, we'd like to have him around. Would you keep him around? Because of his history in the league, because of his, I mean, honestly, his reputation in the league, could you see someone keeping him on? Yeah, absolutely you could.
Would you be okay with the head coach having complete autonomy to do whatever, or would it be okay if, like, whatever hire you make, go to the GM, Borgonti in this case, hey, I'm going to bring on, you know, Mr. S now. Is it okay? Should you be on the same page with your GM, or should the GM, Tim, just let you do whatever and bring in whatever coaches you want?
I think the GM has to let you bring in the coaches. Now, he can make suggestions, but, like, I think the GM has to let the head coach bring in the coaches. Because if the coaches aren't doing a good job coaching, most likely the head coach is going to get fired, not the GM. And the head coach is probably going to have to fire, you know, the tight ends coach who's not doing a good job, not the GM. So, you know, I believe that the head coach should be the one that's, you know, hiring the coaches. And, you know, I do think that there's an environment where, you know, the GM can be picking the players in conjunction with the head coach. But, you know, that to me, you know, is different than, okay, the guy that you literally are sitting in game planning meetings with and trying to develop players with and get ready to play every Sunday. I think that's different. So, you know, that'd be my posture on that.
So you are Borgonti. This is your first really big decision to make, and it's the head coach, which is the biggest decision. Mm-hmm. Would you not go somebody that you know and you're comfortable with and you trust him? And that, to me, is Matt Nagy. You've worked with him. You've seen him go through the fire. He's got experience. To me, it's a no-brainer, Tim.
Yeah, well, and not just that, right? So back to your point about, like, you know, assistant coaches – presumably you're going to know a lot of the assistant coaches because presumably he would want to take some guys that he was with in Kansas City. So, like, let's pretend it's Kafka. Like, well, that, like, they would know each other. So, you know, I think you kind of are killing, killing a bird with, you know, killing two birds with one stone on that one. So, but at the same time, like, look, I think if you're open-minded and you don't know everything and you don't know everyone, you might come away super impressed with a candidate that maybe you weren't considering.
Right.
And, you know, might find out that's – so I think, I guess what I would say with that is, you know, there's maybe a, you know, a lead dog, but things could change.
Tim, if – and this is a huge F – all right, they bring in the right coach. They bring in the right coordinator. They use the draft to bring in more weapons, both offensively and defensively. And they're as close to what New England and Jacksonville and Chicago have done over the course of the past, you know, couple of years. What does Cam Ward hypothetically look like if all of that works right?
Yeah, I think if it works right, you see like what's happened with Drake May. I think you see what's happened with Trevor Lawrence. I think you see, you know, how things have gone for Bo Nix. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's what it should look like. Trevor Lawrence was, you know, it wasn't going great. I mean, it really wasn't. And, you know, back to, I don't know that Tony Boselli knew Liam Cohen, but, you know, they have done, like, they've done a good job, and that's worked out. Look, I think Josh McDaniel's been a great fit, you know, with Mike Vrabel for Drake May. And so that's what it should look like. That's what it should feel like, and that's what it should look like. So, that's what I think it should look like for Cam Ward.
We'll have more with Tim Hasselbeck coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game, here on this Tuesday, continuing our conversation with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach at Innsworth. Wild Card Weekend begins on Saturday, and I got to tell you, though, I believe the game of the weekend is on Sunday. It'll be the first one between the Bills and the Jags. You got the Jags that are playing very good football. The Bills have been kind of up and down, but if ever there was a time for them to finally go win the thing, it might be now. What do you think of this matchup, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that Josh Allen should be looking at this postseason and be like, these are the quarterbacks that are in the postseason. Like, this is the year that this needs to happen where I'm in the Super Bowl. I mean, I think that there's no question that you should feel that way. Now, there's probably inherent pressure, you know, with that type of feeling. And then I think that, you know, the Bills probably aren't as good as they've been in previous years. So, you know, more of it is on his shoulders. So here they are, you know, with all of that pressure, and your reward is go down and play Jacksonville, a team that is maybe as hot as any team in the NFL in terms of how they finished the season. And you've got to go play in their building. You don't get the benefit of, you know, people having to come up and play, you know, in the elements in Buffalo. So I think it's a great matchup. You know, I do think Buffalo, if they can get a lot out of the run game, that definitely makes them a more dangerous team. You know, I think defensively they're not as good as they've been in years past. That can be a problem because Liam Cohen's done an amazing job dialing things up, you know, designing plays. They do a good job of pass protecting. And so that's part of the reason Trevor Lawrence has been so good, you know, kind of through this stretch. So I think it's a really good game. I don't think it's, you know, I haven't seen a line on it, but I would think that's, you know, probably within a field goal, you know, which means, you know, Buffalo's probably got their work cut out for them.
Let me ask you this, Tim, because I think the funny thing about this playoffs is I really feel like you have a lot of teams and quarterbacks that don't have that experience. And, I mean, you got Stafford that's there. Obviously, he's won a Super Bowl. He's got playoff experience. Bryce Young does not. You have Love that, you know, has been there. Caleb Williams does not. Josh Allen, as you mentioned. Trevor Lawrence, I think they've made it once, but not a ton.
Yeah, I think he's got to win. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's Stafford, Rodgers, Allen with any significant, you know, success in the postseason. You know, beyond that, you're right. You're you know, Darnold, Stroud, Young.
Does it matter that they don't have that kind of experience?
I think it matters. I do. I think it matters. Now, I do think it can get to a point where I think there's two things. Sometimes there's like an ignorance is bliss a little bit. You think like, well, I'm just going to be here every year, right? Like I've seen that with some young guys where they're like, yeah, it's just like the 19th week, man. I'm good. I'm just going to keep playing. And guys are free and loose and they play great. And I've seen older guys like understand the magnitude of it, and you know they really work themselves up, and I've seen that, and not just quarterback. I've seen that at every position. So I think it matters, and I think you know how each guy handles it is, you don't know until you're the guy that, you know, they say, hey, you know, the early exit in the playoffs every year. Think about the noise on Lamar Jackson in the postseason had he made it this year. I mean, it just would have been so loud. And I think that's a little bit of what I'm saying on Josh Allen. How's he going to handle it? Because the noise on him being in the Super Bowl with the quarterbacks in the AFC is going to be really high.
Great point. Tim Hasselbeck is on the Chase and Big Joe show. Tim, a very serious question here. Do you know how to drive a stick shift?
I do.
My man, thank you. And don't give me – it's Chase says it's a generational thing that your generation doesn't need to know how to drive a stick shift.
Well, let's see. What Chase and I are the same generation. I think I'm a little older than him.
Yeah, he is.
Tim, I think you're always. I think you're perpetually 33. My bad, buddy.
Well, I think because I lost my hair, you know, at 19, I'm gonna look the same from like 24 to 64.
Right, that's but, it.
But yeah, I think that I have plenty of friends that learned how to drive on a stick shift, so I have experience there.
All right, what was your – you grew up a lot of money. What was your first car, Mercedes?
No, my first car is a car that does not exist anymore. It was a Volkswagen Quantum, which is like basically like a
what
cousin of a Jetta. It was between that and a station wagon were the two cars that I drove.
I could see your brother, Matthew, in a station wagon. Like, that's the family car given down
to him.
Oh,
this is fantastic.
Yep, wood paneled, you know, the whole deal. Showing my age now.
I love that. I can see that.
This is
how in the world did you ever get your wife with that car, Tim?
You know, I was in college in a city, didn't have cars. You know what I mean? It was, you know, that's.
Or did you rent a car the first time you went out with her?
I did borrow a friend's car. It was some type of sports car. An offensive lineman had car. I borrowed it.
You're a good man. All right, back to football. Who do you think, you look at it now, the season's over with, coach of the year? Who would you vote coach of the year from 2025?
I'd say I'd vote for Mike Vrabel or Liam Cohen. So of those two guys, but I think I would say Mike Vrabel.
And why? What separates him from Liam Cohen?
Well, because I don't think that the talent level when he got there, I think the talent level was really bad, and so I think they've done an incredible job between, you know, the talent level and all of that stuff. So you know, whereas I think that there was more in place. There was more experience, and there was more in place in Jacksonville for Liam Cohen.
I agree
and
with that.
I don't think the division was as hard.
Agreed with that. But for Jacksonville, Liam Cohen, what makes them so good? I mean, Tim, that's a really good football team. Are they just because we're so infatuated with the Patriots and the Rams and other teams that we don't look at the Jacksonville that way? Because that defense is pretty damn good.
Yeah, I think the defense is really good. I think you're right about that. They can rush the passer. They got good playmakers, you know, on their defense. And I think offensively, the things that stick out, they're pretty good at running the football. They're excellent in pass protection. And like it is for most quarterbacks, if you protect them really well, then they're going to be good. I mean, that's the case for really most quarterbacks in the NFL. And so that's what's happened for Trevor Lawrence. They've done an excellent job protecting him, which is why you're seeing so many receivers have good seasons in Jacksonville. So that's a pretty good remedy. And I think Liam Cohen, just in terms of things that he's done, designing plays and you know, calling plays, he's been very, very good.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. So how would you answer this with – we know that the Steelers ended up winning. They advance. We'll see what happens moving forward. But let's just use both these guys for a second here. Is Harbaugh and Tomlin, are they both back next year? Is one back next year or neither back with their current teams next season?
I think both are back because both probably want to be back. And I think that, you know, when it comes down to it, when the teams realize – that the second they moved on from one of those coaches that, you know, they could end up somewhere else, you know. Listen, Philly probably feels fine, you know, because they won a Super Bowl after Andy Reid went. But, like, to me, it's, you know, like, you got to be careful when you let a coach like that out the door. I think both guys are back.
Do either show signs of being burnt out to you, though?
No, I don't think so. I think there's a ton of energy and excitement for both guys.
Okay, that's fair. You're the one that would have good insight on it, that is for sure.
Do you have a Super Bowl prediction for us?
Sure. I'll go – I'm going to say Rams-Bills.
Mm. Okay.
Okay.
I think that's kind of what we said here as well. Interesting. Before we let you go, the college football semifinals are happening. You got Miami, Ole Miss, Oregon, Indiana. Are you like me, Tim? It's still hard to wrap your mind around that Indiana is that good because it's Indiana.
Yeah, you know, one of the last games I call, I guess not the last games I call, but I called a bowl game. It was Tennessee-Indiana. It was the Outback Bowl. And I just remember, like, Indiana hadn't won a bowl game in, like, 17 years or something like that. And to think that that wasn't that long ago, where that program was, and just historically who that program has been, that that's what they were. And now, and I understand the climate has changed in college football, but to now think that they, you know, in the college football playoff, are absolutely putting it on teams like Alabama, that's incredible.
It's a great story. I mean, it's one of the best sports stories ever because they've been so bad. I mean, they have the second most losses in college football, and to see them now just pushing teams around like you talked about is on another level. Well, that being said, I'm Team Ole Miss, buddy. I just the fact that Kiffin left them, it's like a bunch of foster kids that nobody's and I want them to win it all.
I mean, I don't know that I would describe them that way, but what I would say is it would be pretty cool considering, like, your head coach left for something that was, you know, quote-unquote better, that you could end up winning a national championship.
Amen, brother.
Tim, appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. See you, fellas.
Thank you. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joining us here on the show. We're going to shift gears from the NFL for a second because Tennessee fans might be a little excited by potential news. We'll talk about that coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And our show is presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel. We'll be back there coming up on Thursday.
So can't wait, Bubba.
To that. So there's this thought with Ty Simpson, the Alabama quarterback, that, you know, he could go to the draft and be ready for the NFL. And I think his group is going through the process to get evaluated. And if he gets a first round grade, my guess is he's going to the NFL, and that's probably what he should do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some that believe that he might not be a first rounder right now, that he'd be viewed as a second rounder, and that he isn't quite ready to play on Sundays. And if that's the case, could that open the door for him to either return to Alabama or enter the transfer portal? This was Chris Lowe on his podcast throwing out a possibility of where he might land.
But I also don't think you want to go into next year playing a kid who's never played. And granted, McIntyre's been on campus for a year. I still think physically he needs to get bigger and stronger. So I think without question, Tennessee's combing the portal for a quarterback. And the one that's most intriguing, and Bama fans and Tennessee fans are going to sit up straight when I say this, is Ty Simpson. I do not believe Ty Simpson will be back at Alabama next year. I think he's gone. I think it's either he's going to the pros and going, you know, entering the draft, or I think he's going to go into the portal. Now, he's, you know, Ty's been around for a while. He's a pretty savvy kid. His dad, Jason, is a coach. So they're not going to do anything without talking to the right people and talking to people who know, I think, most importantly, Bob. A Tennessee kid who I think was interested in coming to Tennessee. There was that transition between Pruitt and Heupel, so it was sort of a weird time. I think there were other times during his career at Alabama where he might have thought about transferring, and Tennessee was in his thoughts. It just didn't happen. But I think this time, if he doesn't decide to transfer, and I think the thing this will – his decision, in my mind, will hinge on simply this. if he gets the kind of feedback from pro people that he has a first round draft pick, I think he's gone. I think he'll go to the NFL. And you know what? He probably should. He got hit a lot. He took a lot of hits, got hit a lot. And this was his fourth year on campus. If he gets from NFL GM scouts, yeah, you're the third quarterback in the draft. We think you're going to go somewhere between 15 and 25. I think he's gone. If it's not, if that feedback, Bob, is not that emphatic about, well, maybe you slide into the second round, then I think he's going to look seriously at transferring. And I think if he does, I think he lands in Tennessee.
That was Chris Lowe on his podcast talking about Ty Simpson. And the thing with Alabama is you got, I think it's Keelan Russell is the young phenom, the five-star that they're really high on. Was it Austin Mack that took over in the bowl game?
I don't remember. Mack. Yeah.
I found that to be interesting. Now, I'm with him that if, you know, if he's graded, if he gets a first-round grade, then he's gone. I think he heads to the NFL.
Is he?
I don't think so.
No.
I think right now he is best case scenario into the first round, probably second round.
By the way, real quick, Kentucky just picked up Kenny Minchie, the quarterback from Notre Dame.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty important. Auburn lost Ashton Daniels, their quarterback, went to Florida State. Listen, if Ty Simpson can get $2 million at Tennessee, go.
Yeah.
Go. Yeah. And have another year up there, you know, hone your craft. Do that.
Well,
I think your time's up at Bama, and I think maybe they might be, hey, you know, if you want to look, we're okay with that. But I just don't think he's a number one. I don't think he's a first-round quarterback.
Here's the other thing, too, is if you land Ty Simpson, does that help you land Graham Simpson, his brother, who's the quarterback at Westview, which didn't you see him?
I did. Called the state championship game. I mean,
he's legit.
He was like watching a Division II quarterback as a sophomore in high school running that offense. It was really good.
I mean, he's got Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Auburn, Boston College. And he's just starting the process, but because as you said, he's a sophomore. But, I mean, he's looked at as being pretty good.
Yeah.
Two more years. So he's listed at 5'11", 182, probably going to grow a little bit. And obviously their father is a coach at UT Martin. So they're going to handle this process correctly. But that would be a huge win for Tennessee because all these quarterbacks that are in the portal are landing elsewhere right now. So
yeah, I mean, if you could get him for $1 million, $2 million, $1 million. But if you're George McIntyre, that's the way the game. It's how it is now. No longer is it you go to school, get redshirted, and then you move away up. I mean, it's competition every single year. You need to know that.
If they landed Ty Simpson, or the really slim chance that Aguilar wins this and gets another year of eligibility, if you're George McIntyre, do you transfer out?
No.
Or do you sit one more year?
What has McIntyre ever done?
Nothing.
If you're George McIntyre, go to a group of five.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is it more benefit? I'm just going to keep it local. Let's say he decides to transfer to Middle.
Good.
Where he's going to go play
every down. Absolutely. Yeah. By the way, Middle lost their top running back, Jaquale Middlebrook.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Virginia.
Mm.
Hell of a running back.
He's good.
That's the game now.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to lose all those guys. Hell, the coach is losing guys left and right.
Sure.
That's just the way it is now. But if you're George McIntyre, why not? If you think, compete and try to beat out Ty Simpson, that's great. Or if he doesn't show up, still be number one. But if they're like, hey, we're all in on Ty Simpson, if you're George McIntyre, see ya.
Well, it's right now on the roster, it's McIntyre, and then they have that five-star.
Coming in from Georgia somewhere, I think, whatever it is. So go to South Florida. Go to Troy.
Right.
Go to Memphis. I mean, go somewhere where you're going to play every down. And then you come back and you got 3 years left.
Yep.
And then maybe Arkansas sees like, hey, we want you, and here you go. I mean, that's the option you get now with these guys, that you could do that. There's opportunity elsewhere. But if Tennessee wants Ty Simpson, go for it.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you do still have instances like Ty Simpson, who has been at – Alabama for 4 years, and you know, finally gets his opportunity. But you know, what's the patient level of some of these kids now? I mean, like, if you know, let's say Vanderbilt ends up bringing in somebody via the portal, and Jared Curtis isn't the starter, is he going to be willing to be patient enough to sit for a year or two and learn, and then be ready to go in that offense? Or is he going to do what most do and go, all right, well, I'm going to go play?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. Because from what I've been told, it's his job to lose.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fine. And, you know, I think what's interesting is Vanderbilt probably now has – Clark now has the cachet to, if they take a couple of steps back to reality – next year, in what was their reality next year. So that means, you know, 6-7 wins to, yes, I did that on purpose, to, you know, to get him experience and have some other young guys. They are, I mean, right now they got some guys coming back. But if they did that, you know, could that be beneficial to him to play and play an SEC schedule, a tough SEC schedule, and then continue to grow within that program?
What if it's even better than this year?
Never know.
Right?
Could be.
What if, I love the what ifs, Lane Kiffin goes after Ty Simpson?
Oh, that'd be something.
He'd do that.
Well, what if he goes after, because there's, you know, Chambliss may have, you know, he potentially could have some eligibility. So what if he went after Trinidad Chambliss?
Would you want to go for a coach who left you in your shining moment?
Hey, look, man, no. Would I? No.
Yeah, right.
But what does the checkbook say?
Yeah.
I mean, that's – unfortunately, that's the name of the game right now. And guess what? He was a Division II quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And Lane Kiffin made him into – now, he had to do the work. I'm not discrediting
sure,
him.
Yeah.
But, like, that combination worked.
Right.
So, I mean, if he's got an opportunity to go and make a bunch of money in Baton Rouge – and potentially turn that into some money on Sunday, you got to do what you got to do.
Are you rooting for Ole Miss?
I am really torn. I'm kind of in the I don't care mode, but I'm also kind of in the, yeah, I'm rooting for Ole Miss.
I just think it's a great story. It might be one of the best. Ole Miss in Indiana, the national championship game, would be wonderful.
Well, here's one reason why I'm rooting for it. Because it might force college football to fix this problem that they have created. And that is because now you have assistants that LSU's like, okay, we were being cool for a minute, but we didn't think we didn't think you were going to win. And now you've won. And so that's hurting recruiting and portal and all the stuff you got to do at LSU.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hurting Ole Miss because Ole Miss can't get the new guys in there, you know, because they're focused on this. So
all the more to root for, man.
Right. Which, so that's great. But my thing would be, again, you got to revisit the, all right, there's got to be a memorandum of understanding that we can't, you got to finish the year and then you move.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I don't know. I really like Miami because nobody, they don't belong in there. And that defense, I'm in love with that defense. But the fact that Ole Miss is in the precipice of doing something really cool and your coach leaves you, you're now in the semifinals, you beat Georgia, one of the best football games of all time. And now it comes down to Thursday night. Like, I think it's great. Man.
Why is it, and we can continue this, why is it that with college basketball, they got it figured out, but they can't figure it out in football?
Different calendar, man.
I understand it's a different calendar, but it's still the same concept that, you know, Joe Dubin is doing a hell of a job where is Mike Organ from?
Oh, Rayon City.
Rayon City U.
How dare you not know
this? I'm sorry. I blanked for a second. I was too into the analogy. Joe Dubin's doing a great job at Rayon City U. He gets them into the tournament. You knock off Duke in the first round. You move to the round of 32. You're the hottest name in college basketball. You don't leave your team until you're out.
Different calendar.
Well, why does it have to be?
Different. Because you leave in April, you're good.
So guess what they need to do? Change the damn calendar.
Yeah. But
it works for the NFL.
There's
it works
more
for
moving
college.
Parts.
That's okay. But they could, again, it's a choice. Everything in life is a choice.
Right. Now, coaches leave. You don't make the tournament. Your coaches leave early March.
Fine.
Like,
that's
McCabe's
fine.
Going to coach Trevecca.
Your season's over.
Yeah.
That's fine.
But nobody leaves during the term. One coach left. We've already talked about this. That was the Bill Frieder left Michigan to go coach San Diego State. And Bo Schembechler said, Michigan man's coaching my team in the tournament. Steve Fisher took over in 1989. They ran the table, won the national championship. That's the only last coach I remember who left when their team's in. There might be one or two others, but
I'm sure there are. Calendar. But for the most part, it works. And so I go with what other coaches
have said. So you're good, like, get rid of the championship games, which I'm all for.
Yep.
And then immediately, boom. Because FCS doesn't play around. Boom. They're immediately doing it. And then January 1st, everything's done. I love this.
Look, I'd be willing to give it a week or like if this coming Monday night was a championship game and then the portal opened the next day and coaches move the next day, cool. Good with it. Fine. Doesn't have to be January 1st.
But the problem is you got to get guys in school. They have to be enrolled in school. You just can't blankly throw the portal out there. I've got to have Chase McCabe in class on day one.
Okay. Then January 1st.
Yeah.
Then have the championship game, the national championship game on January 1st.
I agree.
Then do it.
Dan Lanning's on. He's smart. He's on to all this, man. It's very smart to start playing immediately.
But understand, if you are a coach, you're under the same rule. You can't accept another job until January 2nd.
I like it.
It's all the same thing.
Yeah.
615-737-1025 is Chase and Big Joe on this Tuesday. 102.5 The Game.
All right, welcome back here to the Chase and Big Joe Show, 102.5 The Game. All right, Nick Barris is correcting me. Thank you, Nick. Bill Frieder went to Arizona State, not San Diego State. Steve Fisher ended up going to San Diego State in the long term. Thank you so much there, Nicholas. Appreciate you. By the way, Nick says he's an Oregon graduate. I'll be Oregon versus Miami. I'll be there Friday. By the way, Nick, Oregon plays Indiana. my turn to correct you, pal. Oregon versus Indiana at the Peach Bowl on Friday night, which will be featuring Dr. Crane, somebody that played at your high school, one Charlie Becker.
That's correct. Father Ryan alum.
Father Ryan. We're going to effort to get his mom on. We tried last week, try to get her on tomorrow before the big game. I think it's a great story. The guy's a hell of a receiver, made a big touchdown, big catch in the Big Ten Championship game, and had a touchdown in the Rose Bowl. So Nick, it's Oregon versus Indiana, pal, not Oregon-Miami. Unless you think Oregon-Miami is going to be the national championship game.
Could be.
I think after watching, I'm a believer in Indiana now. Like I told Tim, I've got to get it out of my mind that is not the old Indiana. This is a new Indiana.
Yeah. Well, it's because, and again, what I think is going to be interesting is like 10, 15, 20 years from now, they could do a documentary on schools like Indiana, Vanderbilt. You know, those are the first two that really come to mind. But how the NIL transfer portal era changed the game with schools like that.
Yep.
If this is 5, 6, 7 years ago, we're not having this conversation.
No.
It's a different, you know, it's just a completely different world.
Remember Tim talked about calling that Tennessee-Indiana game? Do you remember who the Tennessee coach was?
Was that Jeremy?
It was.
All right.
Jeremy Pruitt. Yep. That was the old Gator Bowl. That was January the 2nd.
Kevin Wilson with Indiana, I believe.
He's with the Preds at the time.
Yeah, different Kevin Wilson.
Yeah. I don't remember who Indiana is. I mean, I remember they had DiNardo, Derek Mason's old coordinator, Cam Cameron.
Oh, Cam Cameron.
Cameron was Indiana. It was just a kind of – it was a basketball school.
Kim Cornelius.
As a guy I worked with in TV a long time ago.
I say, boy, I say.
So it's a thing where now it's like, holy cow, Indiana. And so it's a process we're all having to deal with, which is great. But the way they just punched Alabama in the face, and a lot of people come back and say, well, Alabama wasn't prepared. And what? Yeah, I don't care. The score was 38-3. You got your ass kicked. That's the bottom line.
You've been corrected on the text line.
Oh, yeah. No.
Bill Frieder went to Arizona State. Fisher went to San Diego State.
That's what Nick texted in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I was halfway there.
Oh,
my bad.
Halfway there.
Yeah. So that was a cause of a coach leaving and hitting the road and going on. So I just think this is – if Ole Miss runs the table, it's just fantastic just to shove it in Kiffin's face, because again, he's never won anything.
Bob wants to weigh in on college football. Bob, what's up?
Hey guys, did y'all happen to see last week when they on game day when they asked Saban how to fix it?
No, I've heard about this, but no, what did he say?
Yeah, you need to look at it. It's really good, because they said, well, you know what he said, you know, college football is basically a chaos. He goes, so this was like on a Saturday, and they said, you know, Monday, 140 players are entering the portal. And you got coaches going everywhere with not knowing who's coaching where. So he's talking about moving everything almost to the same schedule as the NFL. He says it can be done. Move the portal to later. And he said, you basically line it up. If you go back and watch it, it's too much to explain, but it made complete sense. And it was because he's like, you know, all these coaches are going everywhere. No one knows who's coaching where, but they've got to leave because they got a new program they got to go to. He goes, so, you know, that's the whole problem. He goes, they got to change the portal. But if you get a chance to watch it, it makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. Okay, we'll check it out. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. Look, again, I go back to what I said. They could fix it if they wanted to. You can change the calendar. Everything's a choice. They choose to leave it how it is and just let it be the Wild Wild West. And, you know, that's been what they've done, because that's the way we've always done it.
So do you move the Sugar Bowl up 2 weeks to December 19th or whatever it is, or December 14th? I mean
–
They can figure it out.
We change everything all the time. Look, prime example, I use this a lot. It took baseball kicking and screaming to add replay. And guess what? They finally did it, and everything's fine. It took baseball kicking and screaming to add a pitch clock. They did it. Everything's fine.
Nick Bear says, I'm convinced Chase hates me.
No, I like Nick.
I don't know where he gets his – what he does, he plays this – and Nick, I know you're listening. He plays this little pity party, like, woe is me.
I've watched Nick Barris for years and years.
30 years probably, right?
No, I'm a big fan. No, I was just out of the room when you read that. So, yeah.
No, it's fine. Nick says he'll be in the champ – when if Oregon wins, he goes to the championship game in Miami.
Oh, that'd be cool.
But it's not on Friday, Nick. It's on a Monday.
Monday.
Yeah, so still the 19th is the first game.
Chase and Big Joe on this Tuesday. We'll have more coming in hour number 3 here on 102.5 The Game.